Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll hear some conversations from November Decision 2008, the radio program on Chicago radio station WHPK, covering the U.S. election returns on the evening of America's Election Day, November 4th, 2008. The program began as follows.
Live from the campus of the University of Chicago, this is November Decision 2008, a comprehensive look at the 2008 U.S. election. Here are your hosts, WHBK's Mitchell Szczepańczyk from the Ministry of Truth, and from News from the Service Entrance, Mario.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to November Decision 2008. The day we have waited for 2 years has finally come, and the results are forthcoming. I am joined by Mitchell Szczepańczyk. Hey, Mitchell. Oh, wait a minute. Nope, I can't. Let's try this again. Mitchell? Okay, I need production assistance in my place. Why don't you come in here for a second? There you go. Grab that mic, Mitchell.
Hi.
There you go. Okay, cool.
I was in another room.
There we go. Sorry.
Are we good?
We're good now.
Okay, good.
Okay. What's going on, Mitchell?
Oh, there's this little election you might have heard about.
I've heard a little something about it.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure who's running.
So I'm going to find out shortly. We've got a guest on the phone, actually, from BBC Radio Devon.
Oh, excellent.
And it's Vic Morgan. Hey, Vic, how are you?
Mario, how are you?
I'm fabulous. What's going on?
I've just finished doing my program, which you were very kindly a guest on earlier on this evening. And I'm just sitting here watching the results come in, and already for Barack Obama, it's projected that he's got 103 Electoral College votes, which is getting pretty close, is it not, to what he needs?
Still a little ways away, but things are getting there.
Projections actually had the number of safe votes as high as 159.
This is Mitchell Szczepańczyk, by the way.
Hello, this is Mitchell.
Hi, how are you doing, Mitchell? You okay?
I'm fine, thank you. The number of safe votes have varied. I've seen projections as high as 159 votes in the bag, which would mean that with the threshold of 270 electoral votes needed for the presidency, that he has a much easier way to approach this than John McCain does.
Sure, and I've been watching pictures of Grant Park in Chicago as well. We've been getting live pictures on the BBC, and it seems an extraordinary sight with as many as a million people projected. What's the atmosphere like in Chicago?
It's raucous. I won't even say raucous. Most of the day today, it's been an enlightening kind of atmosphere. Everybody is very, very cautious, as we talked last night, cautiously optimistic. Everybody's kind of just looking to see what's going on. Not a lot of jumping around and no celebrating yet, because everybody wants to see what's going to happen. But I've never seen an election night in my life where there are as many parties as there are in Chicago tonight. Everybody is throwing a party tonight, including us.
You very graciously told me that, you know, you go to the same barber's to get a haircut as Barack Obama. So that barber's going to be pretty happy, I guess, if the result goes Mr. Obama's way, won't he?
I'm sure Zarif will be extremely pleased. He doesn't want to talk much about it, but I know he'll be very happy. They're having a big party there tonight, too. They got television crews and stuff all over the place. It's crazy.
How is it reporting on a night like this? Because you two guys must be full of adrenaline. You must be really up for this.
We've been gathering, we've been preparing for this particular evening for about the last 6 months with various organizing efforts that have been underway for this. In fact, the activity still now continues here in the studio and here on campus. Walking on my way onto campus today, I saw an assortment of, you name it, officials, partiers, people, video cameras. It's been buzzing activity of a level that I've never seen in the 12 years I've lived in Chicago.
And by the way, they're just calling Pennsylvania for Barack Obama.
There are projections that we're seeing now from some of the early announcements.
If that's indeed, if that is true, then this is pretty much an early night. If it's true,
I think so. I mean, that's the thing here is like since the key state, a number of people have debated this, but a number of key swing states, as they're called, where the winds basically are for Obama, then the evening, at least as far as the presidential race, could be over. But there are a number of other, a third of the Senate, all of the House of Representatives, and some 150 ballot measures across the United States, including a key one that's here in Illinois, what we refer to as the CONCON, the Constitutional Convention, where once every 20 years, the question is by law put on the state ballot to create a convention to rewrite the state constitution. And I've seen arguments for and against. I could read this as a very close situation here in Illinois. And that's just Illinois, never mind ballot initiatives across the United States on a host of issues pertaining to same-sex marriage, the environment, workers' rights, reproductive health, and so on.
Let me ask you something, Vic.
We spoke to San Francisco earlier on this evening, and they were outlining very much the same thing. They've got a lot of key proposals going through in California today, as well as the presidential election, because it's very easy in the UK to run away with the idea that it is just the presidential election today. I say it is just the presidential election. That's pretty big. But, of course, you have an awful lot of other issues to decide today as well, don't you?
Yeah, a ton. A lot of referendums around the country, a lot of key Senate races that could affect how the next president legislates, not to mention this race. And again, in one of the many networks we have here in America, MSNBC is projecting Barack Obama to win in Pennsylvania. And if that's indeed true, it's a short night for him. It will not be as long a night as people have anticipated.
Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, Virginia, Missouri, I think are the key states there.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most key states. If Barack Obama were to win any three of those five, the rest of the electoral map would not break out. And as far as the presidential race would go, we could be done as far as the likelihood of the outcome here, probably in about an hour's time as we're speaking now at about 7:12 p.m. Chicago time.
And it's 1:12 in the UK, correct?
Absolutely spot on. It's just exactly 1:12. Yes, the second hand has just passed that. So you're right. So we could know in an hour's time who is the 44th president of the United States. That's astonishingly quick, isn't it?
Yes. Well, yeah, extremely. But the way that this has been mapped out for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, it's a path John McCain would have to do the near impossible at this point. And if the Pennsylvania number holds up, it's not going to happen. And okay for me. I don't have a problem with that.
There is also something to be said here in that that's also kind of a relic of the system of electoral governance that we have in the United States, that even though that's kind of interesting for people in Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, and so on, for states like, well, certainly Illinois, but certainly for other states, a lot of people may feel like that their vote may not matter as much. And in fact, some have argued that the Electoral College has basically been a way for to basically depress votes. And in fact, this actually had played out certainly in the 2000 election. And you can find historical antecedents elsewhere that have been in play where this has happened. And so some people have argued, for the abolition of the Electoral College and for a more fairer representation of electoral government in the United States.
We have a first-past-the-post system in the UK, as you're probably aware, mm-hmm. and we don't go for the electoral college votes, but, you know, the number of constituencies, the number of MPs, the one with the most MPs simply wins government. And would that be possible in the United States? Would that be a system that could be brought in there?
Theoretically, yes. Practicality, old habits die hard. And particularly in the United States with regards to electoral systems. But as we've seen in recent years, and especially in recent weeks, especially with regards to a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that people have raised with regards to a lot of the early voting. In fact, a third of all votes of all individuals who are eligible voters in the United States have already cast their vote. 31 states in the United States have that ability to cast early voting. In fact, in Illinois, I actually cast my vote last Thursday, for example. And so as many as a third of the people who are going to be participating in this election have already done so. And what we've seen there has been richly documented in the American corporate media, as well as a number of individual media and voting rights initiatives, has been the concern that there have been enormously long lines, and basically requiring voters to basically take on an endurance contest in order to exercise their right to vote. And this has also been a serious concern here in the United States as well, and probably part of the struggle here. It's been a long struggle in the United States to win the franchise, as it's called, the right to vote, and to have your vote matter. But there's still a concern here that there are and have been problems that have cropped up despite this ostensible in-name franchise. And that's going to be a continuing struggle here, I'm afraid.
Well, gentlemen, it's time for me to depart because it is 1:15 in the morning.
Absolutely.
And, I'm going to go and get some sleep. So.
Absolutely. Listen, I want to extend a thank you to you for allowing me to be on the BBC this week. And thank you for letting us share in some of this history and sharing it with us, as a matter of fact.
Well, thank you for allowing me on your program, Mario and Mitchell. I hope you have a wonderful evening. It sounds as though you're going to. We send you all the very best in the United Kingdom for a great night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Vic Morgan from the BBC's Radio Devon on November Decision 2008. We now hear an extended conversation involving myself, WHPK's Mario, and political commentator Alan Thomas on a host of political topics mere minutes after the victory speech of President-elect Barack Obama.
Past is prologue. The next 4 years, there are going to be some pretty serious challenges that, well, fortunately, I think we all count us lucky that we actually have an articulate, smart person who will be in the White House for the first time in 8 years. And I think a lot of people, including a number of Republicans, are very glad over this prospect. But that said, though, that doesn't mean that things are going to be ducky from here on out. There are concerns both locally in Chicago, nationally and internationally. I've got a list here of some of the topics. I think maybe we should discuss some of them. One that's pertinent to Chicago that we will find out next year when the International Olympic Committee makes their vote. Chicago is one of four cities that is a finalist for the 2016 Summer Olympic Games. And it's something of a jockeying race. It's Madrid, Rio de Janeiro, Tokyo, and Chicago are, at least as it currently stands, the four cities that are finalists. We'll know next year because the IOC always chooses 7 years beforehand who the representative city will be for that Olympia. So that means we'll know next year. I'm reading it if Chicago wins it. Well, first off, my reading of the situation is I don't think Chicago will win it. I think Rio, because A, they've got a lot more money to pour into it, and B, they've got the guilt factor. It has never been in South America. And right. In fact, it's only once been south of the Rio Grande, Mexico City, in 1968. So they're really pushing that super hard. And no doubt the IOC would be receptive to that argument. Chicago, you've had Olympiads in St. Louis, Los Angeles twice, Atlanta, Lake Placid twice, Salt Lake City, and now you're suddenly adding Chicago to the mix here. You may want to share the wealth here. What are your thoughts regarding this, and especially regarding the impacts that the Olympics would have on the Chicago if that happens?
Okay, I think you do have to look at it from a political standpoint nationally. I would think that Chicago would hope to get a bump because of his election, but just to analyze it, not basically to say what I would like to see happen, I think what you left out with Rio is that they've also hosted World Cup.
That's true.
And they have infrastructure mm-hmm. that they don't have to build. They're ready to have an
right.
Olympics tomorrow.
And that
they
will
don't
help
have,
their case, certainly.
You know, they don't have much to build at
right.
all, and they don't have the gentrification issues of relocation like Beijing did, right. You know, just uprooting a million and a half people.
Not to say that Rio, you know, has slums in the suburbs, but nonetheless, your point's well taken.
So I think the sharing the wealth is a good argument, and that's how they're going to look at it. They're going to look at it like, look, North America has had so many Olympiads. You really don't need another one right now. And they're looking at the deficit, Chicago's $470 million deficit.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't believe, as you point out, Rio has much more money to throw at an Olympics. We're not in a financial position to do it.
And, you know, I also think they're looking at the amount of crime that has taken place in Chicago over the last 2 years.
Oh, I think they're going to look at the crime. I think
they're going to have to.
The rising murder rate.
Our transportation is third world at best. Our public transportation.
Thank you, Mario. I ride the CTA every day, and I'm glad that we have buses and trains, period. But every day I make the joke. I say, and they want to hold an Olympics.
Right.
And they can't get buses. They send buses in shifts because they can't get them to run properly and get to their appointed stops on time.
Precisely.
We have too many problems to solve and no money to solve those problems to try to throw another $700 million at having an Olympics.
And
it's not going to work. That's $1 trillion. We're looking at $1 trillion national bailout for the financial industry. Yeah. And we're just one city. We're talking a nation versus a city.
Certainly.
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't think the IOC is made up of dummies. They may be greedy. They may be short-sighted, but they are not stupid.
Bribe-ridden. Whatever.
Bribe-ridden.
That's how Salt Lake got it. But anyway.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Two matters with regards to the finances here. In the case of Chicago, and actually we were hoping to have him on, and it's a pity we probably won't. Ben Jarofsky, commentator with the Chicago Reader, probably the leading, at least in my mind, the leading authority with regards to the Chicago controversies regarding TIFs, the tax increments, financing arrangements. The investigations there show that there's a lot of money that basically are in TIFs, which basically have now become the mayor's slush fund. And this has been richly documented, and evidence is coming out all the time about this stuff. My fear is that, and the problem that entails is that there's no tracking of money that goes in or comes out.
Right.
And so it's very likely that while money could be drained in out of that to help to build a new stadium on the south side for an Olympic, you know, opening ceremonies, how do you know that the money's going to be there? And why, if the money is there, why can't you use a little bit of that to, you know, help with Chicago schools, help with transit?
See, that's the other thing I want to get at. That would open up a whole host of questions
Daly
really doesn't want to answer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for a lot of different reasons.
So it surprises me that he could even go after it with that information coming out that they have a $470 million shortfall.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's the name that John Cass gives Daly? I forget what he calls him. He has a John Cass is as bad as Ben Jarofsky in terms of his hatred for the mayor. But he doesn't care that there's a deficit. He doesn't care that there's a burgeoning crime epidemic. He doesn't care that we have third world transportation. He does not care. His goal is Olympics or not. Every neighborhood in Chicago is going to be different when he's dead. And it'll be because he's doing it while he's alive. He does not care about the Olympics at all. He really could care less.
And I'm glad you bring that up, Mario, because what this new administration and what President-elect Obama will have to face is the gentrification of these neighborhoods.
Bingo.
And the country does not like that. The whole bit, putting in a save the homeowners component to the bailout bill was put in because homeowners are up in arms. They're angry about the fat cats getting bailed out. My neighborhood, where they want to put the Olympic housing right near McCormick Place, I live just a few blocks from there.
Right.
That's a hospital. We need a new hospital on that site.
Absolutely.
Right. We
not
need
more
Olympic
million
village.
Dollar condos that are built by Draper and Kramer, which has million dollar condos 2.5 blocks from that site.
Certainly.
And I don't think President-elect Obama wants to have that on his, you know, as part of his opening legacy.
Yeah, and especially
that he allows this kind of gentrification in Chicago. And wait a minute, we thought you came in for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're backing Daly and his play to push working people and poor people out of their neighborhoods to have a playpen for the rich.
And he also has the fly. You know, he also has the option, Barack Obama does, of ignoring it altogether, as he has done pretty well to this point. He said that he would help support it. This may help the city get it, but he doesn't have to really say anything about it.
That's no, he doesn't true. Have to, but I'm saying if he doesn't address this, because gentrification is happening throughout the nation.
Well, he hasn't addressed it up to this point, though.
It's going to be a backlash. He has to step forward.
He hasn't addressed it up to this point, though. He has never made a statement regarding gentrification in Chicago.
Agreed, but the reason was because he was trying to get elected.
Right.
And I think now he has to address it, and he'll do it from behind closed doors.
Right, right.
You know, it'll be in quiet. You know,
I can accept that.
And he's going to have to tell Daley, you need to back off.
Right.
Because
at least I hope he will.
You know,
I mean, he could.
Right.
I'm
just saying this is what he needs to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
It may not be public.
Right.
He may not come publicly out against gentrification. But I think through those channels, I think Daley is going to hear about it. He needs to.
And especially since we're not six blocks away from Barack Obama's house.
Right.
It's like we're on 57th Street. He lives on 51st and Woodlawn,
Greenwood.
The street that can't be named.
Yes. Sorry, what?
The street that can't be named.
Oh, yeah.
The street. Well, everybody knows where all the police Secret Service are.
Yeah, don't tell the police and the Secret Service that are like there. I'd like to turn topic actually a little broaden a little bit with regards to domestic policy. There are you could pick any dozens of topics here. I just mentioned some that I've got on this piece of paper in front of me. Economics, civil rights, civil liberties, poverty, crime, the environment, global warming, healthcare. That's actually what I think is going to be the next big financial collapse. The fact that our bureaucratic healthcare system, such as it is just so utterly financially draining that I am absolutely convinced that that's just going to come due. And the fact that this is actually why the reason why I think healthcare actually came up as a political issue in 2008. The costs of healthcare have now begun affecting Fortune 500 corporations. So that, they don't, vigorously lobby, but yeah, when the bill comes due, they'll notice. And then they'll say, well, man, someone should do something about this. Well, you have political influence. You have lobbying might. You know, you could probably do a very little campaign or even just as much as saying so on this front. But there are a host of domestic policies here. What would be the key domestic policy issue of dozens that you could pick that is in your forefront in your mind and you think should be forefront in President-elect Obama's mind?
I think you hit on the very one. I think healthcare is so pivotal to everyone, and it is connected to Social Security.
That's my issue. Healthcare.
And I feel you almost can't separate the two, or one dovetails into the other with healthcare leading. And if they don't address healthcare, because you have an aging population, we have a financial crisis that we have to deal with, you have to find some sort of common ground. And there's been talk about one of the ways in which you can address that kind of through a side door is kind of in a Works Progress Administration sort of a scenario where you're dealing with infrastructure. You put people back to work building the infrastructure of America.
It would be very similar to a House bill that's on behalf of Hurricane Katrina. I think it's 4048, H.R. 4048.
Right.
Or 4038, something like that, where it's a WPA-styled project. And that might be one of the things that this administration embraces on a wider scale. You have road infrastructure that is horrible in this country.
Not just that, but also, for example, and this has gotten ignored since Katrina. There was... Not few people know about this. I actually was very lucky to be one of the few people and actually a few media outlets here through WHPK. Something called the International Tribunal on Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, an international convening of lawyers that gathered in New Orleans in the second anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, basically to gather up a documentary record of the human rights implications and the lack of right of return of the upwards of 500,000 people who have been displaced and still remain displaced. In halfway houses, in
trailers that FEMA had set up and just left abandoned. In, you could probably name dozens upon dozens of other locales and venues where there are still people waiting to go back home. And the fact that they haven't is a crying shame. And this is also, I think, a key issue there, especially where the overwhelming majority of people who are affected of that are poor communities of color. And that's going to be a huge issue there.
What I was saying with WPA and how it would tie into healthcare is that these WPA workers would be receiving, as he said on the stump during the campaign, the healthcare that Senator McCain and himself were receiving. It would be government healthcare. And so you would be taking millions of America who probably presently don't have healthcare or have reduced benefits into full benefits. You're now working on getting the infrastructure of the country back in top shape. And so you can kind of kill two birds with one stone and show that you're moving towards taking care of the working class and the poor and helping people get out of poverty through this WPA style program and a new WPA administration.
Mm-hmm.
And this writer, this tribunal, can also speak to that with New Orleans being one of the sites. Do we rebuild New Orleans? Do we rebuild the infrastructure in New Orleans? I heard one pundit say that they should actually let, it was so surprising to me, they should just let New Orleans die, because due to what's taking place with global warming and a lot of other, very complex issues, that because it's below sea level, it would be ridiculous to build new levees, even if you could build them to withstand whatever level,
right?
Floods. I
mean, they dodged the bullet with Hurricane Ike just last earlier in the year.
If to rebuild in New Orleans would just be begging for trouble. And that was a tough pill to swallow. It's kind of what we were saying about the financial crisis. Do you let some firms fail? Do you not prop them up and just let free market reign?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you can let a city die. If a half a million people want to go back to their homes, you can try to convince them that might not be the best thing that they want to do. But if
there's a good cause to be made for that and a good case to be made for that. It's like, you're going to go back to a home that is going to be flooded again. There's certainly a reasonable case to be made for that. That said, though, I think that there is certainly no case to be made for the abandonment of hundreds of thousands of people across this country.
Oh, no, I agree. I'm saying that
WPA-style
thing could address that.
Absolutely.
But there is still land that is reclaimable and has been reclaimed by by more well-heeled interests. And so when that woman said that, it sounded to me like benign neglect, gentrification, and displacement, benign displacement. Like, well, you don't want to come back to these poor, below sea level areas you were living in, but you can't afford this, so don't come back to New Orleans.
Yeah, we'll just, we actually...
And so I think you can't abandon a half a million people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you want to address, like they're propping up mortgages, you tell the banks, these are the people that need to be in the areas of New Orleans that are safe to live in, that can withstand hurricanes and floods.
We have about 15 minutes before we will wrap up November Decision 2008. So it's 11:46 here on WHPK 88.5 FM. Mitchell Strapinchik, Mario, and commentator Alan Thomas, we thank you for joining us. With the time we've got remaining, let's see if we can turn going from like local to national to probably the international scene, foreign policy. And actually... President-elect Obama, I will not get used to that, even though that is really cool to say. President-elect Obama said that that's going to be a key issue. Two wars, obviously the ones with regards to Iraq, Afghanistan. Belligerent policy postures that had been made with regards to Iran, which could well still be in play. You also have matters for a host of countries within the perimeter of the Middle East. Pakistan, who basically... I mean, heck, we've practically been invading it since actually, October, in fact. In fact, I was actually kind of floored to discover in a kind of article, fairly good, well written, but buried in the Washington Post. Oh, yeah, we just bombed Pakistan. Aren't you happy? No.
Yeah.
Not to mention Israel-Palestine. where $5 billion of Americans' tax dollars are going into, which isn't helping Israel and certainly isn't helping, you know, Palestinians who are basically getting the brunt of that. But you could also point to things with regards to the Southern Cone, where in South America you have Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Lula still in Brazil, a new president in Chile, a new left-leaning government in, I believe, Uruguay, Evo Morales in Bolivia, and whoever else other surprises may lie in store. That's certainly going to be a key sphere with regards to policy, foreign policy, in the coming few coming years, possibly in the coming decade or so, especially where in some of the debates, Barack Obama was making belligerent noises, I thought, regarding Iraq, regarding Venezuela. He actually mentioned it by name twice in two debates, in fact.
And not very to mention, definitely Iran.
Right. Not to mention Russia and China as global powers in and of their own right, plus whatever other surprises may lie with regards to global economics. A lot on the international sphere. What's in particular that...
Those were problematic to me, and I knew at the time that was posturing. Mm. I really see him as a more calm, more deliberate diplomat, and going in with a more diplomatic approach to all of those regions that are potential powder kegs. I don't see him. He is not Dick Cheney. He is not Dick Cheney.
Thank God he's not Dick Cheney.
We would need
a defibrillator if he was Dick Cheney.
And keep him away from shotguns.
Yeah, please.
Here.
Keep me away from him with a shotgun.
With a shotgun. Mm-hmm. No, I really think that's... America will not elect a wimp.
I don't think they have this
George
time.
No, they haven't. I mean, but I'm just saying, if you don't look like you're the toughest kid on the block,
right,
America will not get behind you. Even the peaceniks are not going to truly line up if you look weak. So it was complete posturing. Mm-hmm. I really see a more nuanced, more diplomatic approach to solving these issues. I think everyone involved with Barack Obama realizes that, going in bombing things, invading, is not a solution that's sustainable. You know, at best, it's a short-term minor fix, not even, So, no, I don't see that at all. What I do see is with regards to a couple of those areas, and I think this relates to the Middle East, with Pakistan, I do see if they continue to not aggressively turn out, negative forces, strong action will be taken there. As far as Iran, though, because their true leader is not anti-American,
right?
In that way, he can be talked to. They can diplomacy can work.
That was an extended conversation involving myself, WHPK's Mario, and political commentator Alan Thomas on a host of political topics. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.